Connecticut is getting $10 million in federal funding to help young students improve their reading. That money will reportedly expand small group instruction, train teachers, and provide new literacy materials and assessments. We're told the program will also focus on students in kindergarten through third grade, with a pilot launching in select schools. Joining us now to talk about reading rates and how to best improve them in our state is Fran Rabinowitz, one of our education experts on the show, also the executive director of Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. Welcome back, Fran. How are you?
I'm good, Melissa, and thank you for having me.
We have
over 40 school districts starting school today, so it's a big time.
It is a big time. And I know you're an avid reader. You love reading, not just personally, but obviously professionally, and you have a real passion for making sure our little ones know how to read. And, you know, and I hate to kind of be the... I don't want to say the Debbie Downer, but I'm going to be a little bit. I got to be honest, Fran. I'm going to be a little bit of a Debbie Downer in this. Because,
okay,
thank you, Fran. I appreciate you always being so kind to me. I love that we're investing money in this. Okay, so I love that. Two things can be true at the same time. Yes, I think it's great that we have money we're putting into small group instruction, better training our teachers, making new literacy materials, assessments, what have you. I think that's great. But it's not the whole story. To me, I think we've really gotten away from basic principles of reading. And that includes families being more engaged at a younger age with their children. I think even just getting away from tech instruction in schools and really getting back to basics of reading and writing without there being a screen. I don't know if you agree with me, but I do think you can invest and pass laws and do all these things. And that is one part of the pie. But a big part of it is not government overreach, is not funding. It's, dare I say, leaning in with your child? I don't know.
I couldn't agree more, Melissa. And while $10 million is wonderful and we'll certainly take it, and we certainly have invested big in reading. Connecticut has invested very large in reading in the last 5 to 10 years. However, I would say to you that $10 million is not going to make the difference. Do you know what I mean? I'm happy to have it. I'm happy that I believe we are all on the same page now in how to instruct and how to teach kids to read. And I think we're all pretty adamant in our students need to read independently by the end of third grade. And quite frankly, they should be reading by the end of first grade. But what about the joy of reading? What about the enjoyment of reading? Are we concentrating on that enough, and are families concentrating enough? I wonder about that. I truly do. I think that we have lost that art of just being transported to other places in our reading and in the joy of reading. And I think we understand that now as educators, that not only do we have to teach the science of reading and teach them to read, but we're trying our best to show them how beautiful reading can be, what a beautiful experience it can be for them.
I also think, too, Fran, in everyday life, there are opportunities. You taught me this years ago, actually, and it really changed the way that I look at, you know, even just helping my son with literacy and his writing and his reading. And that is engaging in conversation. Like, talk about the misconception of even, you know, when we say reading to your children, immediately people think sitting on the floor reading a book to their kids. And again, that is a way to do it, sure. But you taught me something that I think infinitely changed, I think, my son's literacy abilities. And that is engaging in conversation. That is shutting off music. That is, you know, teaching them how to even hold a conversation or how to even think critically and creatively. How does that also play a role in their reading and writing abilities?
It is so important that oral expression, the language development that needs to happen from the time the child is born, some argue before that. I would say before, when the child is born, all through just talking to the child talking about different experiences. I mean, you've heard me say it a million times how it makes me crazy when I go to the grocery store and see an 18-month-old sitting in the cart on a screen, because there are so many opportunities in that grocery store to introduce children to vocabulary. And there's no question in my mind that the joy of reading and reading is established, and kids feel comfortable when they have that vocabulary background so that they're understanding the experiences that the characters are having in a book, etc. So I couldn't agree more, and I do think, unfortunately, we've gotten away from that. And it is just developing their reading habits. I remember as an administrator in Bridgeport, I ran summer camps and for young kids. And part of what we did was give them experiences in museums and parks and fishing and all of those things, because to build their vocabulary so that they would be more ready to read.
Fran Rabinowitz is here, one of our education experts on the show. She's the executive director of Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. We're talking about improving reading rates in our state. And so just to reiterate, Fran, you had said a couple of things that we could just be doing is engaging in conversation. How young would you say we could start having kind of these, I call them engaging conversations, because it's getting the attention of your child. I mean, could you do that before they even get into school?
Oh, absolutely. I think you do it as babies. You talk to them, you sing to them, you take them around the house, you carry them around the house and show them different things in the house and name the things, a chair, a couch, whatever. I mean, you can't imagine. I just believe that it just builds their vocabulary from a very, very young age. I do think that is incredibly, incredibly important. And, you know, you said I'm an avid reader. I am an avid reader. I love fiction. I read tons of fiction. And I have to read a lot of nonfiction in order to be current in my job. But let me tell you, I have to push myself on the nonfiction. Mm. And sometimes we have to do some things that are not the natural thing for us to do. But we know that it's important, whether it's important for us and our children, whatever it is, I would just say we have to push for that. And I do, because I have to have current knowledge. Mm-hmm. And so I have to sit down and actually pick up that nonfiction book and read it. And I think that some of us aren't always in the mood to do the things that we don't want to do. And I think sometimes you just need to push yourself to do it.
So I will absolutely admit that I fall in that category sometimes, not so much of engaging in different literacy opportunities, but the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's funny that you say that, Fran, because our whole house, we're all avid readers. That part's not too hard. Like reading to Chase every night we've done since he was literally born. That's never been an issue. But it's funny because my son, I don't know where he gets it from, he likes to talk. And I mean a lot. And I don't mean he talks about nonsense. He has really in-depth questions. And the thing that I think I get frustrated with is that I don't have the answers. When we were kids, you know, if my parents, I never knew if my parents were smart or not. They seemed like they were always smart. And if they didn't know something, it was like you went to the big, amazing, everything known, you know, encyclopedia or dictionary. Like that's what you did. You looked it up. You physically looked it up. And then we all learned together as a family what that word or what this instance was about. But now we live in an era where it's Google and there's instant gratification. And I guess my question for you, Fran, is how do you not be frustrated? Like, so you just said, you know, being in a space where we also have to adjust and we have to learn. We're in a space right now where my son does not have tech. I think a lot of families are trying to navigate how do you have a good balance of tech or not. But the thing that I know my son is learning at school is if I don't know something, I could Google it real quick. I could find that out really fast. And when you're in a car, and you're driving and your son is asking you how many of the players from the 1980 winning Olympic team for ice hockey, how many of them did go, how many of them went pro, mom, and which teams did they go to? And do you know if they went to a college team first or did they just go right to the pros? Like, these are really great questions. But I'm like, dude, I don't have any of your answers. How do you engage in conversation or lean into that when you just don't have the answers, but you don't want to stunt them from talking, from conversing, from learning?
No. I think what you have to say to them is, this is information that mom doesn't know right now, but let's go home and figure it out. It's a wonderful question. What you have to do, I think, is continue to tell them. And by the way, Google's not bad. It's okay to have Google. I think we have to embrace the newness that we have in finding answers, but everything is in moderation and to a degree. And I read, I could Google a lot of things too. I could Google AI and I could Google, you know, what's the definition of this, but it's very superficial. It's when we read in depth that we get the depth of understanding of a concept. And I think what you have to do, I don't like to say what you should do.
No, tell me. It's fine. No, this is good. I honestly think, Fran, no joke, none of us were given a How to Be the Best Parent book. But when you have people who know, you know, certain things, like, you know this way better than I do. And honestly, I've learned so much from you over the years. No, tell me what to do. I want to know. Yes.
Well, I would encourage that questioning. I would say, can we hold that till we get home? There is never a question that isn't important. And I'm going to say that's what's hard sometimes. It's hard. I mean, I have grandkids. I have three-year-olds that say, why, a million times. And I want to say, just because I said so. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
But they really have a lot of legitimate whys, and I have to stop and answer them. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
And take the time and let them know that knowledge is important and understanding that is important. And I would say, with your son's questions, anytime you can find the opportunity to sit down and look at print and find out those answers, I think it's really important. And I also think, in moderation, it's important even to find them online and sit and read it together. Do you know what I mean?
Not it's doing the work for them. Like, don't just Google it real quick and give them an answer. Let them go through that process. Yeah.
Let them go through the process. And, you know, let me tell you something. I think kids are on, I think we let kids be on screens too much. I really do.
Yeah.
However, I don't want to ban them completely.
Agreed.
I think we need to be able to teach our children to use things in moderation. And trust me, as adults, we need to learn to use it in moderation.
Yeah, I think that's honestly one of the biggest reasons we've seen such a decline, quite frankly, in literacy. And I know people don't like to hear me say this, but I think if we can't check ourselves, the adults, and how much we have been controlled by screens, how can we expect our kids to do better? Like, it's not enough just to put controls on your kids' tablets and phones and whatever. You have to as well. And part of the reason we get frustrated is because we are very tech heavy and we don't have the tolerance to deal with their stuff because we've got our own stuff.
Because we've got our own. And honestly, you can't believe how many times I'm told, don't bring anything forward that's more than a page or more than a couple of pages. Nobody's going to read it anymore. I mean, that's insane.
That's crazy.
It's insane.
Right. The attention span. That's crazy.
We can't always abbreviate everything to one page. Do you know what I mean? If you want to have a deep understanding of state funding, you have to read.
Yeah. If you want to have a good understanding of really anything, you have to read, and you also have to want to engage, for sure. And Fran Rabinowitz, I love that I get to engage with you. Honestly, you have no idea. Personally and professionally, you are such a treasure, really, truly, to everybody in education. And I so appreciate that you give us the time on WICC, like whenever I need you. You're really phenomenal. Fran Rabinowitz, Executive Director of the Connecticut Association of Public School Superintendents. Thank you so, so much. And I hope it's a happy school year for all of your grandchildren as well. Meant to mention that as well. So happy, happy school year, 2026 to 27. And we will keep a very close eye on reading rates, literacy, all of that, and continue to have chats like this with Fran on the show whenever possible. Thank you again, Fran.